Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the track. Goal!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast, the opposition show with me, Johnny, and my guest for today, Graham from What The Folk Podcast. Graham, I would ask you how you were doing, but we've literally just been speaking on your podcast about 5 minutes ago. So instead, I'm going to ask you to get us up to speed with Sunderland this season, because there's a lot that's happened since the last time we played as well. And telling me, get us up to speed, you know, Mowbray, Sack and Bealing, transferred, the whole lot. What's been going on?
I try and do like the shortened version, but there has been like a lot, to be honest, like a heck of a lot. And then it changed again on Saturday. So I'll try and do as best I can. I think I said before, big fan of Tony Mowbray, probably the best football I've ever seen Sunderland play in my lifetime. Now I'm 37, so I've seen Quinn Phillips and all that kind of thing. But in terms of good, attractive football that you could sort of believe in, that, yeah, look, had a few flaws. Mowbray's football was brilliant. A bloke that completely understood the area and I think was a little bit hamstrung by the fact that he wasn't really in charge of recruitment. But that's our model. He knew that. I know he's had a bit of a stab at it since he's left, but to be fair to the club, he would have known that remit when he took over. But how did the end of Mowbray begin? Now, you're probably speaking to the right person here, because I said after the Millwall game, which ended up being his last game, that I thought it was time to move on from him. But I'd like just arrived at that point after 3 games where we'd not been very good. Mowbray's football never, ever stopped being good at any point. We still created loads of chances. We still got the ball in the box. We just had like games where Swansea away, Plymouth away, and a few other games where like I felt like our XG or something would be like +5 and would have like 20 shots on target and 70% possession, but would not score. And it was just like, I mean, obviously I'm going to mention Ross Stewart because I love Ross Stewart, but he wouldn't have been fit anyway, but we'd never really had a replacement from Ross Stewart getting injured last year. Ahmad covered a lot of those gaps and goals because Ahmad is just on another planet. Hopefully he's back by the time we play each other on Sunday. But that's essentially what happened with Mowbray. Was it got to a point where you knew we were good, you enjoyed the football, but it got to a point where you're a bit like, oh, for God's sake, he hasn't got a plan B here. And he doesn't. He didn't have a plan B. I'm not going to be revisionist with it and say I was always happy with him. I got annoyed towards the end because I was just like, he didn't have a plan B. We were giving away silly goals. If we didn't score by having this lovely flowing passing football, we just didn't score. Was he hamstrung by the fact that the signed 4 strikers had the average age of 12 and a half in the summer? Yeah, potentially. I'm sure he'll feel that, but that's his remit. He always knew that. Yeah. He always knew it was going to happen. He can't then be revisionist and say, well, I never knew. I said at the time it was a really brave decision to sack him. Mm. I sort of stand by that. What maybe wasn't brave was the person they brought in. We had a live reaction pod after it happened and we said, like, look, what do we think? And we went, well, they'll have someone lined up for this. Mm. Bound to have someone lined up. And it did sort of feel like Mowbray was, I don't think he was asking for the sack, but he came out and he sort of prodded and poked a little bit at the model that we have, which is signing young players for cheap under the age of 24 and then selling them at profit when they get better and older. But like the entire squad is made of that. Like we have barely any experience. And if we have any of it, we sell it. Like Pritchard's even going now as well, which is a whole other conversation. But anyway, we kind of thought, right, Mowbray's gone. And I said, it's a really, really brave appointment. If you believe in this model, like without a doubt, and you bring in a young European manager, I think Will Still was a name that was mentioned. I wanted Kim Hellberg, who ended up going to Hammarby. I thought he had I read up a bit about him, and obviously you're always risking it. You never know. But I thought a young appointment with a young European manager that can maybe take us to the next step, build on the good work that Tony Mowbray's had and offer us a plan B. Really brave appointment that could work absolute wonders. Because in essence, everything was there with the tools. We just needed someone with a bit of a plan B and someone who could offer us something a little more than what Mowbray did. If you'd said to me, Mowbray's going to go and Michael Beale's going to come in, I would have been like, okay, we'll just stick with Tony. Thank you very much. That'll be fine. And I think that's kind of where the fracture started. You talked about it on the podcast with me before on my show about how it feels from the outside looking in. There's a disconnect with Sunderland's fan base and the sort of ownership. This is where it sort of began. And I feel a bit bad for Beale in that sense that he's kind of the catalyst of it. But it wasn't really his fault. He's going to take a job. He's managed Rangers. He's been at QPR. He'll feel he's big enough for Sunderland. And there's nothing wrong with that. Whether you think he is or not, there's nothing wrong with having a bit of confidence and being able to do that. And he's out of work and it's a good job to have. And he'll be confident in himself. But from a fan base perspective, you sat there for a couple of weeks thinking, and you've believed in this model of like, that they've got succession planning for managers and all this kind of stuff, succession planning with players, sell, reinvest. You buy into all this stuff and then you suddenly realize they haven't really got much of a clue of who they want to appoint. They've just sacked Mowbray for the crack. That's kind of how it felt. And you were like, so Beale's going to be the answer? So you immediately started on the back foot. It was not a good reaction to the appointment. There were some people who said, give him a chance. He's had this, that, and the other. He had a good win ratio was one that was thrown about a lot at Rangers. Look, I live in Glasgow. The reason he had a good win ratio is because he could beat Livingston, St Mirren, St Johnstone. He couldn't get a tune out of the team. Games like Celtic, Aberdeen, Cup Finals, he just couldn't get anything from that. And watching Rangers up here, I couldn't tell you what the style was, and Rangers were like in real disarray. So I was very worried. A lot of fans were worried as well. So you think, all right, you get used to it and you go, all right, okay, Michael Beale's the head coach. Let's just plow on. And then we get beat off Coventry 3-0 at home and it was awful. Really awful. Like the second half against Borough with 11 men, the whole way around, pretty much. Really not great. So you think, oh, brilliant, this is going to go well. Fans singing about Tony Mowbray and you just think, oh, God, it's gone toxic. So the disconnect starts here, and then we go and win at Hull on Boxing Day because Jack Clark does the Jack Clark thing, and we win 1-0 later on. And you think, brilliant, that's fine. And then I can't really remember the game after that, but I think it was Rotherham. We drew 1-1 against Rotherham. And then, lo and behold, obviously, as by this point, we already knew we had Newcastle in the cup. Sorry for swearing. And in terms of that game itself, we beat Preston 2-0 on New Year's Day. And it was a performance. It was good, but it wasn't like, oh my God, we're so good. It was like, well, that's a good win. That was nice.
Yeah.
A striker scored and you think you're happy and stuff. But that disconnect's already beginning to be a bit like, it's there a little bit. And all around that time, Newcastle get given 6,000 tickets. And we go, hang on a minute. Middlesbrough got denied more than they wanted at the stadium. Like, I've got no issue with Borough wanting to bring 6,000 fans. As long as you're not moving our own season to hold us out, you know, as long as it's safe, bring them along. Leeds got denied the same. But Newcastle was randomly okay. The disconnect opens a little bit more. And then you find out they get hospitality packages. And you think, all right. And a rumour comes out 3 weeks beforehand that they're going to be allowed to decorate the Black Cats bar with black and white photos. They might even get Newcastle legend to speak in. And you think, surely not. Shut up. No chance. And then about 4 days before the derby, after we've just had a nice win against Preston, a nice win, not a brilliant win, a nice win. And you think, oh, well, Beale's won 2 out of 4. Okay, fair enough. it's not that bad. We look a bit, we don't really have a style, but a win's a win. It's fine. Photos come up of the black Caspar, which I'm sure you've all seen, and I don't need it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I mean,
yeah.
My God. Like, I mean, it defies belief. And you just think, oh my God, like, what's happening? And then the chairman, Kirillowy Dreyfus, comes out on Instagram and says, to an extent, he sort of understands his mistake and it's getting taken down. And the whole of Twitter or X, or whatever you call it, are just absolutely laughing their knackers off at us. And like, I know it was awful, mate. And I know every single football fan has the smallest violin, and we've always been, we're the worst threat. Middlesbrough's the worst threat. Newcastle's the worst threat. Every team, oh, we've had it worse than anyone else. But Sunderland have had it pretty shite for a fair amount of time. This last 18 months, brilliant. Loved it. Been fab. Won at Wembley. Got in the playoffs. Yeah. Happy. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh God, here we go. Brilliant. We'll laugh. Everyone's laughing at us on Twitter again. Fantastic. And that disconnect began to widen an awful lot. Like, we were doing an hour long podcast. We normally do half an hour. It was really like, it's still nagging away at me. I can't forgive them for it. I just can't. Mixed in with the Beal appointment, mixed in with the Alex Pritchard stuff that's coming out. What was a really united fan base? I wouldn't say it disconnected as a fan base, but it definitely feels disconnected from the top, because you feel like, hang on, we've believed in these guys and they haven't even got a clue what Sunderland versus Newcastle means, to the point where you think, go and take up photos of Peter Beardsley, whatever the hell they did. You know what I mean? Like, that just, I mean, I had Middlesbrough fans, Leicester fans, Burnley fans, Newcastle fans going, oh, mate, I'm sorry, that's hilarious. And I'm like, it's not. Yeah. But I get
it was great for us, Graham. I absolutely loved every moment of it, to be honest. I thought it was brilliant. But it's obviously for you guys, like, it was just like the self-destruction of it. Yeah. It was just like, have you seen like that meme where like the dog's sat in a room and it's like on fire? That was kind of exactly how it felt for you guys, and to be honest. And then it was a big mistake. Obviously, the last few months have been a big mistake. But it felt prior to that, though, it felt that with Mowbray in charge, the ownership was, you know, a lot better than what it was previously.
Yeah.
Everyone seemed to be on board. You know, it seemed to be all going in the right direction, but it was a very Sunderland thing for us to do in that, from that game, really. And then obviously when the form starts to drop as well, that's where the pressure starts to go even further, right?
Well, I think, you know, you said that before, it felt like a very Sunderland thing. And that was the annoying thing, it was all self-inflicted. None of that disconnect needed to happen. Like, Kirill had Sunderland in a really good place and the fans in a really good place where, you know, most of the fan base believed in this model and the plan and, like, all sorts of stuff. And he just kind of went, I'll just blow it up. Who cares? Yeah. And the weirdest and most Sunderland thing about it all, if you'd spoke to me last week, this would have all made sense. We were brilliant on Saturday and it was fine. So that's where we're at. I don't understand why we were so good on Saturday. I don't understand why we looked like we had a style. Jack Clark was on form and why we like demolished Stoke easily. The performance came out of nowhere and it's just that's Sunderland for you. Like, we've gone, we're good. Everything's fantastic. Believe in the model. No, let's press the red button that they said, don't press, blow everything up. Then when everyone just goes, well, it just ruins, isn't it? Everything's crumbled. We go, you know what? We're going to rope you in one last time. So that's where we're at. And it only took me 13 minutes or so to get there. And I feel like I've shortened it a lot, but a bit of disconnect there. But I said on the podcast review show, mine on Saturday, I'm not going to get too giddy about that win. But what Michael Beale and what the club needs to do is more of Saturday on the pitch and off the pitch. In terms of the interview, praising the fans, playing well on the pitch, having a style, players look like they're enjoying themselves again. More of that, and it's amazing how quickly things fix in football with good performances and good results. But we have Middlesbrough next, which is, of course, a really easy game.
Yeah. with that, though, obviously, I want to just chat about Beale because his appointments came in now. Obviously, things were fairly rosy in Mowbray to some extent. And obviously, you were saying that you may look for a change. But I just want to just show you a graphic on Beale's appointment since. Obviously, this excludes the game on Saturday, but it shows a little bit of how Tony was, you know, he was in and out in terms of the XG for and XG against. You know, you were like power and power. But really, the figures were that you were scoring a lot more than you were going to concede. The XG was fairly good. It peaks. And then when Beal comes in, it's the second blue line. You just see a really big drop off in creating chances, but then the conceding chances are going up quite a bit. And like, I just want to ask you really, what has happened? Because I know you alluded to it a little bit earlier on around like him as being in charge of Rangers, couldn't get a fine tune out of like the big games. Like, where do you think this happened? Because I said on your podcast, but when I watched his against Hull, I was so bored with Sunderland and Hull, and obviously both games were really bad, but it just felt like Sunderland had lost everything that made them good at the start of the season. So, like, what's happened there?
I can't even really describe it. It's weird, but, like, I've got to take Saturday out of it because, like, look,
yeah,
I enjoyed Saturday to the point where I was kind of shocked when the second one went down. I was like, oh, all right, okay. Can I be Abby now? But, like, I'll give you the segment of games. Like, the whole game and the Preston game, we weren't great. We weren't bad. We played relatively well. We did deserve the win in both of them, but we weren't, like, scintillating Sunderland. But it kind of maybe goes back to before about what I said about Mowbray. We weren't great defensively under Mowbray, to be honest. And we've got good defenders, relatively decent defenders, a relatively decent defence. But it was, like, front foot football, young lads having a go. That was it. Yeah. You can even imagine Tony Mowbray saying that, can't you? Just young lads having a go.
Well, let's just play. Just enjoy yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was like. And that did have some cons. So I feel like we played Leeds at home. And this was under Mike Dodds after Mowbray had gone. And we were as defensive as we'd been in a long time. But it was like it worked really well. Like, we kind of, like, sat and allowed them to... And I suppose we were good at Hull in a sense with this as well, under Beal, where we didn't press them, like I think a lot of people do, because they pass it along the back hole. We just sat and went, we'll just keep it then.
Very Hull thing to do, yeah.
Yeah, and it looked kind of good. Like, it looked kind of good. But I did see the stat about the XG prior to the game on Saturday, and it didn't shock me at all. Because one key thing that a lot of Sunderland fans have said, and again, I'll take Saturday out of this, and I hope Saturday is a marker where this looks like an anomaly as opposed to the regular thing. But watching Sunderland under Tony Mowbray was, at worst, really frustrating. But you could pinpoint the fact that the club had maybe hamstrung the team a little bit by not signing enough experience in midfield. And Corey Evans being injured, obviously got injured against Hughes. He's still out. Yeah. And Ross Stewart going and not really being replaced by someone who can score as many goals as we would expect Ross Stewart to in a full season if he's fit. But it was still nice to watch. But it's still frustrating watching your team dominate a game and then can't hit a bondo with a banjo. Under Beal, it's like the defence hasn't got that much better outside of the game on, I was saying that we've got a great own goal in a hilarious way on Saturday. But would... The defence is not that improved. We just sit back a bit more. And it's almost like the ability to just be more free-flowing has been taken out of the players, which I suppose is a good thing because we want that plan B. But yeah, I mean, it sucks the life out of me. And I'll tell you what's really interesting. Like I said before, obviously I work up in Glasgow, so I see a lot more. And with my job being the job that it is, I see a lot more of Rangers, Celtic, and hear the kind of fallout. And Philip Clement's come up to Rangers and done a good job. He's lost one game, which was the Old Firm, which can go either way a lot most of the time. Yeah. But a lot of players, like I spoke to Cyril Dessers last week, who had a really bad time under Michael Beal, starting to turn around a little bit. And someone didn't ask him about Beal directly, but they asked what Clement had done that had seen his form improve. And it's the second time I've heard it from a second player, and he said he simplified it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I do worry that Michael Beal is too far into his PowerPoints, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, overcomplicating the simple stuff.
Yes, whereas Mowbray was the opposite. Mowbray was maybe almost too simplistic and too like utopian. Just go and play, lads, go and enjoy yourself. And maybe the lads are just going, I don't really know what I'm doing, because even in Saturday's game where we were good and we looked a bit more like front football Tony Mowbray, I've got to be honest, it was a lot better on Saturday. And I'll reiterate that and I hope it continues. But for a good portion, a good first 25 minutes, I remember turning around the lad next to me and I went, I still don't see the style. I don't see what we're planning on doing. Eventually, it turned out the style was pass it to Jack Clark because he's having a really good game. And that tends to work quite a bit. And we did play good free-flowing football. Look, he's missing out on Roberts is injured. Although Barr had a really good game on Saturday. We've got a few players missing. We are missing players in key positions, and I don't mean in terms of injuries. I mean in terms of we need a midfielder and we need a striker by the end of this window, which hopefully we'll have. But I just... I don't know quite what his style is yet. But if he continues the blueprint that was Saturday, then potentially he can change that. And if he continued to speak the way he did after Saturday, instead of calling Sunderland fans outside noise, talk about disconnect, eh? Then maybe it'll fix. And look, every Sunderland fan wants it fixed. I don't think there's anyone, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think there's anyone sitting there wanting Michael Beale to fail and the club to fail. I'm finding it hard to forgive what the club did. And I think many people would, but I think human nature means at one point, if these people don't go, you eventually just kind of go, oh, just crack on, because life moves on, doesn't it? Like, and 100%. it has to continue what happened on Saturday. And the more he does what he did on Saturday, the more he'll probably will not forget about these things, but it'll begin to feel a bit better. But if I take out Saturday, God, we've been boring. Like, it sucks the life out of me watching a Michael Beale team, apart from Saturday, which I feel like I've said a million times, but I'm not a Beale fan, Johnny. I'm not a Beale fan, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, around, like, the style and stuff, because it is always an interesting one. When a manager comes in, how long does it take them to get going? I think we were fortunate in a way with Carrick that he had a couple of games and we had the World Cup, so he could spend a good 6 weeks getting his message across. And with Borough, I don't think it's overly complex of how we play. There's you know, we'll change shape during the game. There's just the very standard things that you'll tend to see from most teams. But with Beale, it's kind of like that sandwich analogy, isn't it? Where you put the sandwich, you don't want a ham sandwich, or you can have a ham sandwich or something else, and then put more and more and more stuff on it. And then it's not a ham sandwich anymore, it's something completely different, which is just like a very difficult thing to do. But when you were saying there around his strategy was to give it to Jack Clark. And then if he's having a good game, then great. What if Jack Clark isn't there? Like, where does that creativity come from for Sunderland?
Hopefully we bring in Ahmad, and I'd say Ahmad. But
it was Lincoln, wasn't it, like last week? So it was like, I was like, just, I thought that would probably kill you off, I think. I was going to message him, like, what do you think?
I think that
would have been it. I think that would have been it. I think.
Oh yeah, like those people like replying saying, "That's it. If he goes anywhere else in the championship, especially if it's Borough, you know what? I'm done. No more season tickets. I'm going to watch something else." And we'd obviously all be roped back in by something else. But look, Ahmad was massive for us last year. You've seen it. He got his debut at the Riverside. Should have scored, but like he tortured every team he'd come up against. He's a Premier League player. I don't think he's going to come back. But what he also allowed is a lot of space for Jack Clark last year as well. Now, if you bear in mind that last year Jack Clark had more space because people were watching Ahmad and Roberts on the right-hand side, and then you look at Clark's numbers that he put in the season without Ahmad and with Roberts being injured currently, that shows you how much he's just built on even further. I think the only team I've seen really, really nullify him this season, oddly, two of them, Middlesbrough. But I think that was negated by the fact that he had to defend for 45 minutes. He's not a defender. I mean, it was Isaiah Jones that like flew past him and he put like a horrendous tackle in. Like that was right in my corner and we all just went, oh, Clarky, man. Like, and I think like when you're on the front foot in a game like that and we're down 10 men and Clark, he's been asked to be a left wing back against Isaiah Jones, who's a really like attacking right-hand side of player. It's maybe not a surprise that he was as nullified as he was. But in the game where we, you know, kept 11 men, I hate to touch on it, but that Newcastle game, Trippier had him in his back pocket, if I'm honest with you. Like, he couldn't get anywhere near him. But we're talking, like, you know, as much as, you know, neither of us like that lot, Kieran Trippier is an England international about 50, 60 times over. Yeah. So if it takes someone with that level of experience, that level of quality and nous to stop Jack Clarke, it kind of shows you how few people haven't been able to stop him. So if Clarke is not there, I mean, I said Ahmad before, but Ahmad's your right-hand side. So yeah. Who's your left-hand side? We've been really lucky that he's not had an injury yet, but I do think he'll stay.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I think they'll stay at the summer, although there's interest in him from Lazio, which, to be honest, I like Sunderland as much as the next man, but like, if you're going to offer me the Colosseum, pasta, nice food,
yeah.
Rome,
yeah,
I'm tempted, I'm not going to lie. I'll stick to Southwick, however, I would be tempted by Rome. But I think, you know, another example is there, if he gets an injury, what do? It's a big worry. It's one of those things, Johnny, in it, like, would be knackered without him, but at the minute we've got him, so it's not a problem to worry about. But it will be one day. If we don't go up this season, I cannot for the life of me see how I hang on to him. It's not my money. I don't receive any of it. But if he goes and he goes it for anything less than 20 million, I'm going to be absolutely peeling, because that flies in the face of buying low and selling at the value. Because I think, if Alex Scott's going for 25 million to Bournemouth or whatever, after what, 5 assists and 4 goals last season, then Jack Clarke's worth what, 150, 160 mil? Is he?
Yeah. Well, the thing is with Rodgers as well, like, Rodgers has had more goal contributions than what Scott did last year, and he's going for 15, 21 year old. And it's like, well, he's only really had a good 3 months and he's just gone for 15 million. So it's interesting. But I think with Premier League teams, they can kind of force the hand because they know that 15, 20, 25 million is a lot of money for championship clubs. For them, though, it's nothing, though, isn't it? Which is strange, because imagine saying, well, even 10 years ago, saying £25 million for a player, you'd be like, well, that's a bit much, isn't it? I remember when Torres went to Chelsea for 50 million and everyone was just like up in arms and about it, and now it's just the norm.
Andy Carroll, 35 million.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, it's just like, wow. Yeah. And like, he cost nearly double Suarez as well at that point as well. So, interesting one. But I was going to say another creative player, like Pritchard as well, who was really good under Mowbray, is now, who came out with nowhere, again, out of nowhere, that he was no longer in the squad, requested to leave, Was it about a contract? Did he want a longer contract, or has it just been a falling out? What's the end and all?
It's mad, really. And we discussed it on the podcast on Saturday, because obviously it's a big talking point, and all the lads kind of disagreed with me to an extent. So essentially, he's looked a little bit cheesed off in the past few weeks, but I need to go back to the summer for this one in a way. He's not part of the model because he's 29, 30. So he's not, you can't buy. We got him on a free transfer in League One when he was injury prone and hadn't done it. I think it was Huddersfield he came from, and on Norwich potentially, something along that line. Came in, I thought, all right, if he reaches his potential, that's a decent championship player that went for like 12 million at some point. He's grown into a really important player, and his experience gives us an awful lot. He's one of those players that didn't really look that out of place against Premier League opposition in the FA Cup. And he's been really key to us this season. I think it's probably been his best season for Sunderland, to be honest. But he was massive in getting us out of League One and stuff like that as well. But the contract's always kind of like hung over him a bit. And in the summer, he was always linked elsewhere. And it felt like the club were trying to get rid of him. They got rid of Lyndon Gooch and they got rid of Danny Bart in the summer. And that was a case of they weren't going to offer them an extension to the contract because they were over the age of 12.5. So that means that we're not going to offer you a new contract when you're at Sunderland. If you're not a kid, you're not getting a new contract. Sorry, son. And Pritchard was sort of part of that. But I think you got a year extension triggered anyway in the summer. So he extends the extra year. Now, the stuff came out afterwards to say that he was actually the one pushing the move in the summer. I don't know that. And then it came out on the Wednesday that we'd offered him a new contract. And then by the Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, he didn't want to play for the club again and he'd asked to be removed from the squad. I'd heard about this on Friday night and it felt far-fetched at that point.
Yeah.
But I think, and this is only my viewpoint, and a lot of Sunderland fans feel different. A lot of Sunderland fans feel if you refuse to play for the club, you're letting down the fans, you're letting down your teammates. And I can kind of understand that. I'd like to hear Pritchard's side at this moment in time. I haven't heard it. But I find it, based on everything I said beforehand, the fact that the club came out on Wednesday and said that it offered him a new contract and he was happy, quote Christian Speakman, then the Saturday, he's not happy. Michael Beale says it's an ongoing thing and he's basically handed in a transfer request and refused to play for us. Now, we've only really heard the club side at the moment. We haven't really heard Pritchard's side. If Pritchard says, you know what, actually, I just can't be asked anymore. I just wanted to go. Then fair enough. I'm probably not a big fan of Pritchard just deciding to do that and refusing to play. But I find it really hard to trust the club, which is the only side I've heard so far, over a player that I really, really like an awful lot as a player on and off the pitch from what I've seen, based on the stuff that has happened previously in the past 6 to 8 weeks. But it's not needed, and I get the feeling that both sides are going to come out with not a great deal of credit when it really does boil down to it, I think. But he's a big miss as a player. For me, as a player, he's a big miss. It's more experience out of the team. It's another young boy that you're going to have to bring in to replace him. And is that going to work? I don't know. For me, I'd prefer him in the team. I'd prefer him on a new contract and this not to be a thing. But he's not going to stay at Sunderland. That's not going to happen. I think once you've said you're unavailable for selection, that's it.
Yeah. And looking ahead to Sunday, I know there's everything that's gone on over the last couple of months, and we've kind of did a whistle stop tour in the last 30 minutes. But looking ahead to Sunday now, obviously everything like off the pitch is forgot about for 90 minutes. How are you feeling about the game against Borough on Sunday?
I don't really like going to Borough, to be honest, but I do at the same time.
You are going though, so
I'm driving down from Glasgow at like 6 a.m, like a total idiot. So I've had good experiences at Borough. I've had bad experiences at Borough. I literally have a 50-50% record. Seen us win twice there and not concede. Seen us lose twice there and not score. So I personally don't see Borough as a derby. And that's not a Sunderland thing, trying to play it down. I used to work for Middlesbrough. Me and you both know, Johnny, I'm never going to work for that lot up the road. It's never going to happen. And you can have that on record. Never going to happen for Borough. Not a problem. So I've got friends who are Middlesbrough fans. I've got, I know ex-Borough striker Randy Campbell really well, one of the nicest men I've ever worked with. I've got no animosity towards Borough at all. But when you get in the stadium, it feels like a big game. So I do kind of like it. Like, you all are shouting at us. We give you a bit back. There's probably a few choice words said that I can't say on the podcast about each other. And it feels like a bigger game. So I like it. Like, you know, my girlfriend's never been to Middlesbrough away. And I said, oh, Howie, we'll go to Borough away. Like, that's just, it's good fun, this, because we both have a bit of crack and we both hate each other for 90 minutes. Then we come up and go, oh, well, that was nice, wasn't it? Or that was crap, either way. But I think it's important in something to season as a whole, because I think if you listen back to everything I've said before, you'll hear a fan who's probably really frustrated, is a little bit disillusioned, probably doesn't quite understand what my club is at the moment, but is hanging a lot of faith on the fact that Saturday was a bit more like what I recognised Sunderland AFC to be. Mm. If we then go to Middlesbrough and we are what wasn't Saturday and was it 6 to 8 weeks previous, then you go, I forgot, well, flash in the pan, waste of time. If we go to Middlesbrough and then put in a good performance, I'm not saying we have to win. I'm saying I need to see a style. I need to see the management come out afterwards and say, fans were brilliant, tried our best. This is what we tried to do. This is how we won the game. This is what we wanted to do to win the game. We narrowly lost it. It's an important point, whatever it may be. And just feel a bit more connect with it. And I think it's probably a horrible game in that sense because, well, Mowbray used to do it. Mowbray used to talk it up like a big derby, and it is when you get in. But I think that was a detriment to him a little bit because he would build it up as if it was a bigger game than it actually was. But I think in the context of Sunderland's season, it is a big game this Sunday, because if it becomes what you saw against Hull and what other fans saw in the weeks previous, lack of style, a manager that comes out and doesn't take accountability for his own mistakes, and a team that look like they don't know what they're doing, and a boardroom that apparently like Newcastle who enjoy themselves when they come to a derby, then it's shite and Saturday was a waste of time and it meant nothing. If this weekend is the players look like they know what they're doing, there's blood and thunder and guts, they want to go for the game, they want to get 3 points, not because it's Borough, because they want to build on their win over Stoke. They're starting to believe what the manager's doing, and the manager comes out afterwards and speaks really well, clearly, coherently, and with a bit of passion. Then you can go, you know what, maybe something's building here. Maybe give him a bit of time. So I think it's massive in that sense, because Saturday is either a flash in the pan and it's an anomaly or it's the start of something. I wish it wasn't Borough, because there'll be a lot of Borough fans that don't see it as a derby. I know that. There'll be a lot of Sunderland fans that don't see it as a derby. I don't see it as the derby, but it's a big game when you're in there. And when you're in there, if you get beat, if we get panned or we lose the game narrowly late on or we don't play well, it'll feel worse than when you get beat off like Stoke, for example.
Yeah. I feel like this game, like from what you've said to me there, like I feel like this game is a lot bigger than you probably think it is. I think in terms of a season standpoint, where Beale's at, with everything that's building like externally, where the club's at, say if you get done 4-0 again, there is a lot that could potentially be a season ending way of feeling. The season. I know it's quite dramatic potentially saying that, but you lose. The fans are already on Beale's back. The club's already past the January window. You haven't been going again and bringing a new manager. Just feel that you just write the season off. Do you feel like it could potentially be a season defining game really at the weekend?
Yeah, because it's mad, isn't it, when you think about it? When you're looking at like where we are in the league, getting beat off Borough, in essence, doesn't really matter, because we're still like 3 points off the playoffs and stuff like that. But look, nobody knows your football club better than your fan base themselves. You know Borough better than I'll ever understand Middlesbrough and what's going on in the feeling within the fan base. And I'll understand Sunderland more than any fan who doesn't support Sunderland, because I live and breathe it every single day. And I know the feeling's not good at the moment for everything I mentioned beforehand. I've got two worries, and we're speaking on the Monday, so we don't know who's been brought in. We don't know who's going to leave. My hope is that Ahmad comes back and we sign another striker and we bring in a good defensive midfielder. And it looks like we've got a bit of cover at left back anyway with a boy from Leeds, which we need because we've got some injuries there. We go to Middlesbrough, put in a good performance, get a draw or win. Beale comes out and says, you know what? The players are starting to take on board what I'm saying. I'm really starting to feel a connect between the players on the pitch. And I thought those fans were absolutely magnificent today. What a brilliant set of fans. Comes and gives a fist punch. Do what you want. That's my hope. My fear, which is always a stronger emotion, isn't it, is we don't get what we need. We don't get the striker we need, or we get a striker that's 19 years old and we get told it's the model. We don't bring in a defensive midfielder with any experience. Pritchard goes, so we lose more experience. Middlesbrough fans are well up for it. Borough passes off the park and we get beat 3-0. And Beale goes, oh, well, I don't know what the fans expect. We've won three in the last seven or three in the last eight. Like, oh, grow up, you know, and you get a grip. And at the minute, I don't know which way it's going to go. And that's because of Saturday. If Saturday hadn't happened, I would say, yeah, mate, if he gets beat, he's gone. It's away. Like, rubbish, hate him, worst thing on the planet. But there was such a difference on Saturday that came out of absolutely nowhere. If that continues the next couple of weeks, and I'm not saying win every game, Like, one of the just questions we had, yeah, just show us something. Show us a bit of connect. Like, there was a question on the pod from a listener, and they said, like, how many games does Beale have to win? And my answer to that would be, he doesn't have to win a set amount. He just needs to rebuild this connection, which is just dissipating. And he's got the ability to do that. Like, look how all those things that happened, and look how positive I feel about one stupid little win over Stoke that it might fix.
A very Tony Mowbray saying, though, that will, and Grant Ledbetter as well. Grant Ledbetter was always saying, no, well, that's football. And that is like a very, like, way to bring it all together. It's, oh, well, that's football. You know what I mean? You win, you don't. But there's a lot riding on it. And what's your prediction for the game, Graham? I know we had our prediction on your show, but it'd be good to repeat it on ours. What are you going to go for on Sunday?
I'll snap your hand off for a draw. It's been a long while since I've seen someone win at Borough. I think the last time was the last time we won in the league, which was 2005, which is still funny because it was one of three wins that season. And I remember I went to see McFly at Newcastle Arena after that. Random fact that no one needs to know.
It was great fact, though. Great band, you know. Enjoy yourself.
You weren't expecting it. And the FA Cup game when Sessegnon scored, when we were probably expected to win at the time because of the quality we had and the lack of quality you had at that point. So would you won, but I never feel like these games are ever really draws. I couldn't even tell you the last draw if we had one recently.
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I
honestly can't think.
I'll have to look at a head-to-head while you talk to me. Just
put yourself on mute so you can't hear the click on that. Pretend we've done all our research that we both always do. I do think that it'll be a win either way in some senses because it always seems to be that. But I actually think because of that law of averages is we're probably due a draw at Middlesbrough and you're probably due a draw against us where you don't get the better of us at the Riverside. So I'll go 1-1 if we do re-sign Ahmad, which you can tell I'm kind of trying to manifest, not really believing it's going to happen, we'll win 5-1. Which is not going to happen.
Well, you gave me enough time there to scramble, and it was actually 2018 where it was 3-3 in the championship. But
Tony Pulis.
24th, yeah. And then prior to that, what you were saying, though, it was like, you know, it's either a win-loss kind of thing. It does really go back to probably, like, say, 2009 season when we drew 1-1, and then 2012 as well, we drew 1-1 in the FA Cup by Robson scored for Borough on that day as well.
That was on this day, wasn't it?
It was, it was actually, funny enough. Yeah, I should know that. For my birthday tomorrow, so it was like, oh, well. That was my birthday present, but yeah, that's good knowledge. But Graham, I want to go 1-1 as well. I'll go 1-1 as well. I think it's going to be a tight game. With Borough's injuries as well, it's going to be difficult for us. But yeah, I think it all relies on what business we do over the next couple of days.
Yeah,
it's the only time we could speak. So it just worked out for us. But Graham, where can everyone find you if they want to learn more a little bit more about Sunderland before the game?
Someone who abused me. I got a bit last time in the comment section of this. Someone ripping me earrings. I'm not going to lie, I didn't wear my earring for like ages after that. So whoever commented on that, I pretended I didn't care, and I was really hurt. You can find me at Twitter mainly at What the Fog Pod, and like Spotify, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. Your usual place I'm spouting about. I really should change the name of the podcast because it's got nothing to do with Sunderland. It's just my name, basically. But it was a uni project and people wouldn't let me change it. But What the Fork, you'll tell to find it anyway. We'll have a review show after the game. And if you win, it's always a laugh because we'll probably tell you didn't deserve it or something like that.
Yeah. And to be honest, it kind of sums up what you've just spoke about over the last 35 minutes of what's been happening at Sunderland, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck's been going on? So,
yeah, what the fuck has been going on indeed?
So, Graham, thanks so much for coming on, mate. Obviously, always a pleasure to catch up with you, especially the last couple of hours as well, where we've been catching up as well. So, all the best, of course, not for Sunday, but for the rest of the season. But for right now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. It was Isham Show, and that was all your Sunderland chatter in a pod. Not the Borough Breakdown.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.